Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Blue Jays Nation Radio
with Cam Lewis and Tyler Yaremchuk,
a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts.
Welcome into episode 205 of Blue Jays Nation Radio. Stream it on the Blue Jays Nation YouTube and available wherever you get your podcast from. Yaremchuk and Coomzy with you to recap a weekend series against the Colorado Rockies. Coomzy, did you enjoy that weekend baseball? Interleague play.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time the Colorado Rockies had visited Toronto since that famous 2013 season. So there's a lot of people in the GTA, of course, who are huge Colorado Rockies fans who have been waiting for a whole decade to see their favorite players. Series just happened, and I can't really remember anybody on the Colorado Rockies. But we said last time, we were like, this has to be a sweep or we're not going to be feeling good. Well, as we always do, we kind of contradict ourselves. 2 out of 3 ain't bad. We're going to live with it. It's hard to sweep teams. Even when they're bad teams like the Colorado Rockies, we saw a few different versions of the Blue Jays in this series. They got, of course, hammered in the Friday game, and then they had 2 wins on Saturday and Sunday, 5-3 and 5-0 behind some very good pitching. You would have liked to see a sweep, but come home, beat Seattle, come home, beat Colorado. Not bad. 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Can't complain.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we said leading into the series, too. It was like, hey, this should be a sweep. If you win 2 of 3, you live with it, but you couldn't lose the series. Just looking, you mentioned all the Rockies fans in the GTA. That first game, they had a great time at that ballgame. The Rockies scored in 7 of the 9 innings as they absolutely thumped the Toronto Blue Jays. We are going to break this whole thing down with a little 3 up, 3 down. And since they did win the series, we will start with the ups. And it's hard to talk about this series and not talk about how strong the starting pitching was. And listen, if I were to tell you before the series, hey, the Jays are going to get 2 really solid starts in this series, you would have been like, perfect. Gausman and Berríos. Wrong. It was Yuriel Rodriguez in his major league debut and his Blue Jays debut. Comes in, goes 3 2/3, strikes out 6, only allows the 1 earned run. And he looked good. Again, that's a Rockies team that, despite the fact they put up 12 runs in game one, is not the most, you know, intimidating offensive group in the majors. But the fact Rodriguez was able to do that against a collection of MLB hitters is incredibly impressive and kind of has me excited for what he can do maybe as that fifth guy going forward.
Yeah, definitely. It's reason to be optimistic because, I mean, this was sort of one of the wild card signings of the offseason. It was, of course, the biggest contract the Blue Jays handed out. It was mostly 1 and 2 year deals, but the Yuriel Rodriguez contract, 5 years, I think it was $32 million with some bonuses that could put it up to over $40 million. So a pretty big commitment and an interesting player they signed because he's pitched really well in Japan, but also didn't pitch last year because of a contract issue. Pitched in the World Baseball Classic for Cuba, had a few starts, pitched quite well. And the last time he had pitched in like competitive league baseball in Japan, 2022, he was a 1-inning reliever. And then the Blue Jays brought him over here. Of course, he has the slow start to spring training, makes a couple of starts for AAA Buffalo, looks way too good for the league. So they call him up right away, makes that nice start for Toronto. He looked absolutely electric coming out to the mound. Just fastball had a lot of life on it. The slider had all kinds of zip and movement. And he looked like the kind of pitcher who's, you know, excited on the mound, almost like an Alec Manoah, Marcus Stroman kind of thing, a guy who's, you know, rah-rah on the mound. He's moving around. He's when he first came out, like to come out for the first inning, he looked really charged up. And it was, you know, this is the kind of guy who fans are going to like. Fans are going to enjoy watching this guy pitch. He has nasty stuff. He has an exciting personality. There was also something else worth noting, too, is that Yusei Kikuchi, they showed him on the broadcast kind of showing him the ropes. Yariel Rodriguez didn't know that he had to go out to the warm-up spot, the bullpen in the outfield. So Kikuchi, you see him in the video kind of bringing him up through the dugout and taking him out. And that's an interesting relationship because, of course, Yusei Kikuchi from Japan, Yariel Rodriguez pitch in Japan. So kind of one veteran showing a new player the ropes. It's cool to see that sort of stuff. And I think that the Yariel Rodriguez start with Bowden Francis coming in, it was definitely encouraging because he's such a wild card coming into the year. You didn't really know what to expect, but I think this is a name that is going to be very interesting to follow this year.
And I should add, part of my optimism with Rodriguez is coupled a little bit with the disappointment in what's still going on with Alec Manoah, but we'll touch on that a little bit later. I love that you brought up the Yusei Kikuchi thing in that video the broadcast showed of him going, getting Rodriguez, the two of them chatting as they walk down the field and doing the little tradition that the Jays do of when, you know, whoever's starting that day, the other starters go watch them. They walk from the bullpen to the dugout with them, kind of like a united front sort of thing. I love that Yusei Kikuchi has turned into a fan favorite. It feels like kind of just yesterday. Remember, there was the offseason after his first year when things went terribly. He was at a Leafs-Ducks game rocking a Ducks jersey. And I remember we kind of like everyone roasted him for it. And it was like, dude, come on. Like, you play for a Toronto team. You can go to the game because you live in California. Even if you're a Ducks fan, like, maybe just don't rock the Ducks jersey that game. But the fact he's flipped into an absolute fan favorite over the last 18 months, pretty much, it's been quite the turnaround, man. And he is really likable. And even going back to that first year when it was rough, like, again, we were all pissed off at how bad he was pitching and there were other things going on. But remember, he went to them and said, like, I'll go down to Buffalo. Like, don't feel like because of my contract, you have to keep trotting him out. Like, he did handle the bulk of that season really well. And this turnaround's been awesome.
Yeah, I think that's sort of where it started with Kikuchi becoming a fan favorite. Like, he signs the 3-year, $36 million contract. Seems like a lot of money for a starter, but, you know, when you look at the other contracts being thrown around, that's, you know, pretty standard money for a back-end starter. And after the first season, it was, you know, trouble with the command, couldn't go deep into starts. And like you said, he told the Blue Jays, if it'll help and work for the roster, then I will allow myself to be optioned to AAA Buffalo, call up somebody else to fill the spot. And what they did is they wound up just putting him in the bullpen. He pitched well there, seemed to find his confidence. And then last year, of course, was the revenge tour. So far this year, he's been solid. And I mean, I really do think it all kind of begins with that situation back in August and September of 2022, the season was. And that's sort of where it begins. It's that ability to be a teammate and kind of recognize, you know what, this isn't all about me. If I have to go down to Buffalo late in the season, well, you know, look, the results aren't there. At the end of the day, I can go and improve my stuff and come back up. Like, I think that's what people like to see. You don't want to see somebody go out there and get lit up, make a million excuses, say, you know, it was this is happening, or the coaches aren't this, blah, 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 the defense behind me. Nobody wants to see that. So I think Kikuchi turned himself into a fan favorite here. And that's actually an interesting one to watch because that 3-year contract's coming to an end this year. And it's like, if you had told me when they signed that contract that, you know, we're going to be sitting here worried about what Yusei Kikuchi is going to make on his next one. Are they going to be able to keep him around? What's he going to get? I'd have been surprised because I thought after that first year, I was like, man, this is a disaster. This is a write-off. This is going to be Tanner Roark all over again. But man, it's really turned around and he is a very integral part of this rotation and the team's chemistry as well.
Yeah, I think a big part about the future of Kikuchi also, it depends on a few factors. Like, you know, heading into next year, presuming that there's no rebuild and this team finds some level of success this year, I feel like we need to always make that footnote. But heading into next year, you would have Gausman, you would have a Berríos, you still have Chris Bassett under contract. I think largely what will determine if they want to bring back Kikuchi is maybe not money. It's more, what does Rodriguez look like this year? And where are you at with Alec Manoah by the end of the season? Because if Rodriguez is good and Manoah finds himself somehow, I know there's not room for them both this season, but then maybe you have some scenario where next year you kind of know your five. Ricky Tiedemann would be the other guy probably in that conversation as well. You'd think by next season he's ready for full-time work. So they have other options, but if Rodriguez turns out to flop and Manoah never finds his game, then yeah, I could see a world where they want to bring him back. You said Kikuchi turning into a fan favorite. Absolutely. How about the fact Jose Berríos is turning into an early season Cy Young candidate? In his last two starts, he's now pitched 13 and two thirds innings. He's only allowed six hits. He struck out 13. He has not allowed an earned run in either start. He is looking like one of the most dominant arms in not just the Jays rotation, not just the AL East, not just the American League, all of baseball. Coonsy, this start is unbelievable.
Yeah, the Major League Baseball released a list today. It was the power ranking of the top 10 starting pitchers in baseball right now, and it did not feature Jose Berríos, despite the fact through 25 and two thirds innings, he's allowed three earned runs, two of which came in his first start, only one earned run over his last three. He's got 21 strikeouts, only walked seven batters. His ERA is down to 1.05. It's funny, we talk about that 2022 season, and Berríos, of course, signed the contract that was considerably larger than the one that Yusei Kikuchi signed. So while there was worry, oh no, Yusei Kikuchi is the brand new Tanner Roark, this was, oh man, the Blue Jays signed a 1-2 starter to a good contract, big money, $150 million, I think it was. And he's turned into a pumpkin all of a sudden. And of course, we figured out by now, given how he performed in 2023, given how he looks now, of course, that season was the aberration. That was the anomaly. The Blue Jays really need this from Berríos right now, because Kevin Gausman, because of his injury, his slow start to spring training, can't be an ace right now. He's not going to be that number one guy coming out throwing 6-7 shutout innings, 8-10 strikeouts like we know Kevin Gausman. And of course, we'll touch on that more later when we get to the downs. But Jose Berríos has filled right into that spot as Toronto's number one starter. Like I said, 1.05 ERA through four starts, and against some decent lineups too, right? Tampa Bay, Houston, Seattle hits for some power. Of course, Colorado, like we've said, they're not, you know, a big, scary, intimidating lineup, but seven innings, only two hits and the two walks, especially after some of the trouble that we saw Kevin Gausman have on Friday. I mean, any lineup on any given day can hit. You know that a pitcher is pitching well when they hold the other team to two hits and two runs, and Jose Berríos has just been on the entire season, and I think it's only been four starts. We're only into April. I mean, we're only in the middle of April, so plenty of time to go along, but maybe this will be the year that Jose Berríos gets some Cy Young attention. Who knows? He's obviously got to keep it up for longer, but it's a really encouraging start to the season. And you know what? If we're going to be optimistic, why not? Let's call this the Jose Berríos Cy Young Tour and see what happens.
I do love it. And it is one of those awards too, like all of those, like the MVPs and things like that across sports. Like if you don't establish yourself in the conversation early and you don't take hold of like some sort of a narrative, it's very hard to like in the second half of the season start making noise, because a lot of times writers and the people around the sport who vote on these various things in various situations, they get stuck with one narrative and they kind of run with it, right? So the fact Berríos is off to a great start like he is, it does make it interesting. Another guy off to a great start, and he's our third up for the day. It is Justin Turner, who came through huge with a three RBI game in the series finale as the Jays won 5-0 on Sunday. But it's not just what he did in that third game. It continues to be what he's done throughout his entire Blue Jays career here to start. It's been 44 ABs now for him. He's still batting 386. He picked up a hit in every game, or in both games he played against the Colorado Rockies. Like, this dude just goes up there. And listen, last year with this Jays offense, we talked about how with runners on base, they had a lot of uncompetitive at bats, right? Like not even situations where they would drag the count out deep or anything like that. It was like a lot of times big name players going up 1-2-3, like three strikes, and they're swinging at a slider in the dirt to strike out. Like the fact they have Turner now in the middle of that lineup going up, and even when he's not getting hits, he's going up there and giving really, really competitive at bats. It's massive, man. And listen, a lot of us, myself included, were not excited about this signing at the time. It was like, how is this guy going to even fill the void that a guy like Brandon Belt's leaving? With his approach and the style of hitter he is compared to Belt, he's filling that gap and then some.
Yeah, he leads the Blue Jays with 17 hits now already. He's also tied for the team lead with David Schneider. Eight RBIs. The batting average is at 386. The OPS is at 1.095. I mean, it's not going to last like this forever. We can look back to last April and remember the April that Matt Chapman had. Speaking of MVPs and narratives, we were all honking the horn about Matt Chapman, MVP, great April, and then, you know, cools off and doesn't have that the rest of the year. But I don't think we need to expect that that necessarily from Justin Turner. This, of course, he's not going to bat 386 and have 1,000 OPS all season. Those are MVP numbers. That's even better than what he was doing in his prime with the Dodgers when he was an all-star most years. But, I mean, if the Jays are getting... Like you said last year, there was so few guys on the team who could come up on an, in an RBI spot, runner on second with two outs, and just, you know, pop a single into the outfield or lace a ball down the line, like we keep seeing Justin Turner doing over and over and over again. And I mean, the thing is they don't really necessarily need him to hit like this throughout the entirety of the season. What they just need is the veteran who can come up in run producing spots and come through for them. I don't think it's necessarily unreasonable given Justin Turner's pedigree, who he was during those years with the Dodgers. Like I mentioned, even last year with the Boston Red Sox, they weren't a very good team, but they could score some runs. And a big reason why they could score runs is because they had Justin Turner in a run producing spot and he would frequently come through. Like, I know there's a lot of people who are kind of against the idea of saying someone's clutch. It's not necessarily a skill, you know, it's a smaller sample size, more randomness. I don't know if I really believe in that. There's certain guys who, you know, especially when you do have the experience and you played in the big games like Justin Turner has, won the World Series, all kinds of playoff games with the LA Dodgers. There's guys who have been in these spots and don't, you know, get bogged down by pressure the same way that other guys do. Or when you're going up against a pitcher in a tough spot and that pitcher rears back and gives you his best, that's when the good hitters shine through. And Justin Turner's always been someone. He protects the zone well. You know, he can spray the ball all over the field. This was so badly what the Blue Jays needed last year. And I'll admit, I was one of the guys who was a little meh about the signing just because of the context, because we're excited about Otani, we're excited about Juan Soto, but I mean, a 1-year fairly inexpensive deal for a guy like Justin Turner, like, this is a really, really good looking signing for the Blue Jays. And I think if it weren't for the Otani thing, then we'd probably have been more excited about Justin Turner, but we probably need to give Ross Atkins and co more credit for this addition, because it really is the perfect addition for the team.
Yeah. He is looking great. That OPS north of 1,000 is just awesome to see right now. And yeah, he'll come back down to earth at some point. But I think as long as his approach stays the same, even if his numbers go down a bit and he comes up in a couple of big spots, you're still going to be happy with what you're getting from Turner. Just quickly before we wrap up the three ups, let's give a little bonus, some love to the bullpen. I know Genesis Cabrera, Nate Pearson both pitched really well in the series finale. Nate Pearson comes in, strikes out the side. I mean, he looks great when you keep him in these low leverage spots. And I'm excited to see if throughout the course of this year, you talk about just like Turner. He's been in so many big spots, he doesn't get phased. If they start to slowly ramp up Pearson and give him a bit more experience and a bit more leverage and maybe just crawl towards a bigger role in this bullpen, I'm excited to see what he can do there. But the big name that I'm loving right now, and a lot of people are, Jimmy Garcia. I mean, he has been unbelievable. He is throwing the absolute shit out of the baseball. Like, he's just rearing back and letting it go. He's looking like, again, a high end bullpen option for them, which is something they so desperately needed with the injuries.
Yeah, it's really kind of funny. There hasn't really been much talk about the fact that Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson, your closer and your setup guy from last year, have both missed the first like 2 weeks of the season, almost 3 weeks now. And there really hasn't been any talk about it because the other pitchers, especially Jimmy Garcia, man, he looked really good in that Saturday outing, strikes out the side, just throwing electric. I think it was only 12 pitches to strike out the side, 9 or 10 of them were strikes. Yeah, the bullpen combined in those two wins, the 5-3 one on Saturday, it was Tim Mayza, Chad Green, and Garcia. They were perfect and they struck out 6 batters, Genesis Cabrera and Nate Pearson in the 8th and 9th inning after Jose Barrios on Sunday, 2 perfect innings as well. The Pearson thing's really interesting because he looked in that game against Colorado on Sunday like somebody who knows he's probably among the names who might get optioned when those two guys, Romano and Swanson, come back from injury. And he pitched like a guy who's like, man, I do not want to be going down to AAA Buffalo. I want to be pitching in the big league bullpen. I belong here. I'm good enough. And I mean, thus far, he has been absolutely good enough. But unfortunately, it's a numbers game. So it's very difficult to say if Pearson's going to stay or if he's going to wind up being, you know, think last year to Jay Jackson. He was pitching really well too at a lot of times, but he wound up having to ride the bus back and forth in Buffalo. And that's kind of just how it is when you have options. So we'll see what happens. It's an interesting situation for the Blue Jays and their bullpen and pitching stuff.
Does Bowden Francis still have options?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he does. I mean, maybe that's a situation where you're like, okay, like Pearson looks good out of the bullpen. Bowden Francis, if we're running with Rodriguez as our 5th starter, and I know they did kind of like a split thing there. Rodriguez went through the order a few times, then they put in Francis. But if you have, or if you think you one day want to have Francis as an everyday part of your rotation, may like more than Pearson, obviously, because they're not even giving Pearson a sniff of that. Why wouldn't you send down Francis instead? I know you're getting bullpen arms back, but send down Francis and let him keep pitching 4 to 6 innings every time he's out there in Buffalo and keep his arm stretched out in case there's an injury versus just putting Francis back in the bullpen. Like, maybe Pearson actually is a better option right now for what the team needs.
Yeah, it's possible. And you also, of course, have Mitch White still up at the major league level. He can pitch multiple innings. Maybe he's the guy who goes behind Yariel Rodriguez. He doesn't have options. They DFA'd him last summer, made it through, went back to AAA, and he was killing it. He's been okay so far this year. And I think just knowing the Blue Jays and their asset management, I can't really see them waiving a guy like Mitch White and, you know, and instead of just optioning a guy that can go down. So I do agree with you. I think maybe Bowden Francis is the guy. Give him a few rips in AAA Buffalo, but it's kind of a difficult one because, you know, this is a guy who's he's pitched well at that level, and then in the major leagues it's been really good relief outings and then kind of not always the best start. So hard to say necessarily what to do, but, you know, there's a handful of options, and it's a good problem to have that you have at least a handful of arms who you believe can pitch at the big league level.
All right, let's get to the down from this series and stick with the arms. Kevin Gausman did not look good. I mean, saying did not look good is putting it politely. He got absolutely rocked against the Rockies. 6 earned runs. Like, it was not good for Gausman. It's been the second straight start where he hasn't looked well. His final lines are, 6 earned runs over 3 2/3, 10 hits. And, like, that wasn't bloop here, bloop there, like we've seen in the past when Kevin Gausman kind of has a rough outing and it's like, that was just like bad BABIP and like whatever. They were hitting the ball and tagging him. It's almost like the Rockies knew what was coming in. That's not good for a second straight time for Kevin Gausman. I'm still sitting here kind of going like, hey, he didn't have a spring training. As much as you don't want back-to-back bad starts from your guy and a Cy Young finalist from the year before, I'm willing to sit here and have some patience with him while he figures it out, considering he missed some time through spring. Are you at all concerned long-term wise about Gausman?
Not really. It's more about what depth the Blue Jays have behind Gausman if he needs to spend some time on the injured list. I think given that you have kind of the two question marks, you have the three spots that we've talked about before. They're good in these spots with the veterans, Berríos, Bassett, Kikuchi. And then in the Gausman spot, he went in the first game against Tampa, came through without a spring training and did 4 1/3 innings and only allowed the one run. But since then, was pulled in the second inning against the Yankees after allowing 5, was pulled in the fourth inning against Colorado after allowing 6. That's not really what you love to see, but I think with Gausman, like you said, he hasn't had the spring training, so they kind of have to work out these kinks early in the season. It might wind up being an injured list stint because, you know, there's some worry the velocity's down. It's not where it's supposed to be, so it might wind up there, but I don't think the Jays necessarily need to panic and do that. I think he has to sort of pitch through at the major league level and kind of just build himself up, and that's just the way it's going to be. I think if we're getting into May and this is still happening and the velocity is still low, you probably have to talk about a time on the injured list, maybe ramping up down in Dunedin, something like that. But it's difficult to say with the options behind, because like we just said, Bowden Francis hasn't necessarily been great in the starting pitching role. He was a great reliever last year, but can he be relied on as the number 5 starter to give you 4 or 5, maybe 6 innings? It's hard to say. And then, you know, Alek Manoah, who we're going to touch on in a little bit, and he's had 2 rehab starts in the minor leagues. Neither of them have gone that well. So the Blue Jays aren't exactly overflowing with starting pitching options right now. So I think with Gausman, you have to go and hope that you're getting more outings like the one in Tampa where he gets into the fifth and he's pretty good than what you saw in New York and against Colorado.
Yeah. Next up for the downs in this one, the bats, just again, it was a fine series, I guess. You know, you score 5 runs in each of your wins. They did put up 4 in the loss. And I mean, it didn't matter because they would have needed to score 13 to win that game. But I mean, not electric with what you would have expected with the Rockies rolling into the dome where the Jays traditionally hit better. But also this narrative around lineup decisions just isn't going anywhere. And I mean, you talk about the fact that, hey, once again, they played Davis Schneider for 2 of the 3 games and it's the 2 games they win. Also, Dalton Varsho had a great first 2 games of that series. The dude crushed home runs in both games, hit a grand slam in game 2, and then they don't play him in game 3. Like, again, part of it is just now it's a narrative and it's not going to go anywhere. And the fan base, and we're always going to bring up when this happens, when there's something even mildly questionable. But as much as you can sit there and point to numbers and matchups and whatever, I think if a guy hits a home run in back-to-back games, it's baseball, man. Ride the hot hand and throw him in for the series finale. That didn't make a ton of sense to me. It didn't make any sense at all, honestly.
No, it really didn't. I don't want to turn into us just harping on the lineup, but it's hard not to when it's like, this is a weird one. Varsho hits the grand slam on Saturday, and it's like, you know, he's had a slow start to the season, and that grand slam, you know, it was pretty much the only offense Toronto had. All five of their runs came in the first inning, and you go into the next game and it was, okay, there's a left-handed pitcher, Kyle Freeland, on the mound, so no Varsho. But also with no Varsho, you're putting another left-handed hitter, Kevin Kiermaier, in center field, so it's not like you're getting a platoon advantage here. And Kyle Freeland, the Colorado Rockies, he's pitched there for like a decade, and Dalton Varsho comes from Arizona. They're played against each other in the National League West, and Varsho is 3-for-7 against Freeland for his career. So it's like the numbers there. I mean, he's seen Freeland a decent amount of times. He's faced the Rockies a ton of times playing with Arizona. So I'm not really sure what that one was all about. They seem to have these kind of predetermined plans when so-and-so is going to come out. And as we know, it's more complicated than left versus right and blah, blah, blah handedness. It's more about, okay, this guy throws his fastball at this speed in this spot. He throws a slider, this spin rate. These guys are good against X, Y, and Z. But, you know, we're a vibes-based podcast. That's what we are. We are honest about that. And I think if you have hit a grand slam in one game, you ought to play the next game, because it's hard to get a hot streak going if after your grand slam you're sitting on the bench. I don't want to go too hard on these decisions, but we're like two and a half weeks into the year, and there's already been multiple instances where somebody comes up with a huge hit, a big double, a home run, whatever, and they're not playing the next day. And I think I am a big fan of riding the hot hand. I think it's something that should maybe have more of a say than the data. Maybe.
And I mean, hey, if we want to defend it, for all we know, they go to Dalton Varsho at the beginning of the series, right? And they say, hey, here's your plan, man. You're playing game one, you're playing game two. If the pitching stays the same, game three, that's going to be your day off. Kiermaier got game two as his day off. Like, they might talk about this plan beforehand and be like, we're sticking with it because we want to make sure you guys can get through a full season. And you know, chance that Varsho's understanding in all of this. But it is just, from an outsider perspective, annoying to sit here and watch guys who look like they're starting to get going, and boom, you're sitting for a game. So not ideal. Third down I had here. Okay, we're going to talk about the injury thing with Romano and Swanson. I think there is a really good argument that the guy they're missing the most is actually Danny Jansen. And Alejandro Kirk had a good series finale. I'm not trying to take anything away from that. He reached base in all four plate appearances, went 2-for-2, grabbed two walks as well. But the bottom line is, this dude has an OPS of 429. The defense has been fine, but in the series finale, he's rifling a ball into right field. Like, they need Danny Jansen back. And I don't think there's much of a platoon when Jansen's back either. I think it's him as the 1A, and Kirk gets one game a series, if that.
Yeah, it is sort of what it's looking right now. And I mean, the positive thing for Danny Jansen is he hit a grand slam in his debut there in AAA Buffalo for in his rehab stint, and he's gone 4-for-14 all told. Yeah, Alejandro Kirk, it's been disappointing, because, you know, this is a guy who 2 years ago, he was an all-star silver slugger, was one of the best catchers in Major League Baseball, both offensively and defensively. The defense, I think, largely has been there. But yeah, like you said, there's been some kind of noticeable gaffes. That throw to first base, it was a designed play, and the throw was just nowhere near where it was supposed to be. And then, of course, offensively, like I said, this is a guy who won a silver slugger in the past, and he only has 8 hits so far this year, a 170 batting average, 429 OPS. When you're the catcher and you're kind of the only catcher, because, you know, the other catcher is Brian Sir, and third stringer, he's not going to see that much time. Doesn't know the pictures all that well, because he's just someone the Jays, you know, acquired through waivers in the offseason. If you're kind of the one catcher, obviously your focus is on defense and game calling. That's kind of your number one thing. And you kind of hope that with Jansen back in the mix, if he's catching, you know, 3 of the 5 games, Kirk's catching 2 of them, maybe with less playing time, his offense is going to come through more now. But man, he looks like a very different hitter than the one 2 years ago. The one 2 years ago where the Blue Jays were so comfortable with their catching tandem that, of course, they moved Gabby Moreno to Arizona. And part of that trade was because they were really comfortable with the two guys they had. And Alejandro Kirk 2 years ago looked like one of the best catchers in Major League Baseball. And It just hasn't been the same since then. So hopefully when Jansen comes back and they're back into the more normal two quality starting catchers, Kirk's sort of a pseudo backup, like a quality backup. When he's in that role, maybe he'll do better, but it's getting hard to say. It's been a long time since we've seen Alejandro Kirk do well with the bat. And I think there's a validity to worry about the long-term look of his bat.
Yeah. All right. There you go. Those are your three up, three down for the series against Colorado. The Blue Jays move to 8-8 on the season. There are 9 teams in the American League who are 500 or better on the year, and 5 of them reside in the American League East. The Jays are 8-8. They're 5th in the division. If you were to put them in the AL West, they'd be tied for first. So it's another year of frustration having to play in the American League East. Before we get into some other things, we're going to step aside and take a quick break.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Back on Blue Jays Nation Radio, we touched on Danny Jansen down in AAA, off to a good start there. Expectation is we'll see him back with the Blue Jays soon. Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson also made rehab starts down in Buffalo, and a little bit of mixed bag of results there. But again, I'm not going to read too much into the results. As long as they get through those and are healthy, then that's kind of all that matters. And it's also one of those things when Romano, Swanson go down to AAA, they're probably working on kind of specific things, right? Like, I'm not worried about the results there.
No, it's not that big of a deal. Romano's had 2 appearances and he's gone 1 inning in total and he's walked 4 guys. So that's a little bit, you know, not necessarily ideal. Eric Swanson, 2 appearances, 1 1/3 innings and has allowed 1 earned run. So just, you know, decent, solid stuff. Like we talked about earlier with the bullpen, the replacement backup guys have been doing so well that there's no need to rush Romano and Swanson back. And like the Jays are, you know, struggling to get through the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning. Those names that we mentioned earlier, Jimmy Garcia, you know, Chad Green, even Nate Pearson, who we talked about. A lot of guys are stepping up, so there's no rush here. If these guys need more time in Buffalo, it is what it is. It's not the end of the world. The Jansen one, though, like we just sort of talked about before the break, it really feels like the Blue Jays could use Danny Jansen back as soon as possible.
Yeah, the other name that made a start down in AAA Buffalo was Alek Manoah. After things didn't go well in Dunedin, they bring him up to AAA. He allows 4 earned over 3 1/3. I know Keegan Matheson watched the start, and I was going through his Twitter, and he said, you know, his stuff looked better. He didn't look as rattled, so maybe that's the positive to take from it. But I mean, we've dissected this Manoah situation 100 times. I feel like we've done this whole conversation of like, hey, he didn't look good in a rehab start 5 times over the last year. It's whatever at this point for me. Like, I don't think he's coming back up anytime soon. So whatever.
Yeah, I'm not really sure there's a reason. There's no reason to rush. Like, the situation's not ideal. We talked about Gosman earlier. They might need to find a replacement if he lands on the injured list at some point, if this persists. But we saw this last year. There's nothing to be gained from bringing Alek Manoah up too early to fill into a spot. He's coming up and then he's going back down if he struggles. They have to get him right down in AAA or Dunedin or whatever it is. And as of right now, he said all the right things following that rehab outing. He was happy with how he was attacking. He was happy with his stuff. He was happy with how he felt afterwards. We'll see how he feels, you know, with with how his recovery goes, how his arm bounces back, of course, but the results just aren't really there in the minor leagues yet. So I don't think you can be talking about, all right, we got to get this guy up because we got to fill him into a spot. I don't really feel like that's the move. We did that last year, sort of, didn't work out. So the Blue Jays need to take things more slowly with Alek Manoah this time.
Also down in Buffalo, handful of prospects hitting pretty well. Elvis Martinez is crushing the ball. Spencer Horwitz mashing right now. Will Robertson has 4 home runs in his first 9 games at AAA. I mean, it'll take an injury, I think, for one of these guys to force or to get their way onto the roster, but exciting nonetheless. I saw they shared, I think it was MLB Pipeline, had the Jays as like the 6th or 7th most, quote, stacked AAA team in all of baseball. That's encouraging.
Yeah, it was. They looked at all the minor league teams in baseball and who's got the most exciting players, and the Buffalo Bisons ranked either 6th or 7th. I mean, there's a lot of guys there who are hitting like crazy. Spencer Horwitz now, he came up last year, of course, 395 batting average with 17 hits and 16 walks. Or Elvis Martinez, you mentioned, he's already got 6 doubles across 12 games, batting 318. Will Robertson, who had it was a fine season last year in AA, he's come up and it's his first go around at the level with Buffalo, and he already has 4 dingers. 9 games, like, that's really exciting. Of course, you have to kind of look at it with a bit of a grain of salt because, you know, you're facing AAA and in some instances, you know, quadruple A style pitchers who maybe aren't the best. And then, you know, they're doing that robot umpire thing in AAA again, where the strike zone is a little bit more player friendly than it usually would be, more player friendly than it would be in the big leagues. So combination of not as great pitching along with those, with that umpire situation, makes it a really good hitting environment. But still, like, when you see stuff like a guy, you know, hitting for that much power in their first go around at the level, or a guy who has more walks than hits, like, those are usually pretty good indicators that this is somebody who can find some success at the big league level. And that was one thing we talked about, is an exciting thing going into the year in 2024 for the Jays this year, is there's a lot of guys who can come up in August and September when needed. I think last year David Schneider came up and completely changed the season. There's a few guys on AAA Buffalo where it looks like maybe we'll have another one of those this year, and it's really interesting to see. Or Elvis Martinez is the one that I'm really interested in. I think that power will be exciting to see if that translates to the big league level.
Yeah. All right, there you go. That is a wrap on everything. Before we get to what's coming up next with the Toronto Blue Jays, let's continue our look back at the weekend and get to a quick AL East report with our guy, Brett Holden. Brett, tell me what's going on.
Yeah, you talked about prospects. You just started off with prospects, and we're going to talk about the number one prospect in baseball, as Jackson Holliday has finally made his MLB debut for the Baltimore Orioles, getting called up for the series finale against the Boston Red Sox, but finally got into his first major league series against the Milwaukee Brewers. And it didn't start off too well. He started off 0-14 to start his major league career, but he finally got his first hit in the majors with his dad and Cal Ripken there as well. It was in the bottom of the 7th. He is now 1-15. He came around to score in that inning to get the one and only win the Baltimore Orioles would get in the series against the Milwaukee Brewers. 6-4, they would drop 2 of those 3. They are now 9-6 on the year and 2nd in the AL East. Also talking about prospects, Jordan Westberg had another unbelievable series there, 5-12 in the series with a homer and 2 RBIs, excuse me. They have the Minnesota Twins coming up today as they visit Baltimore at Camden Yards. Let's move to the New York Yankees, the number one team in the AL East, who have now moved to 12-4 on the year. They just took 2-3 against the Cleveland Guardians. Aaron Judge went 4-13 in the series with a three-run shot, excuse me, in the final game. They lost that game 8-7, unfortunately, for the Yanks. Cody Poteet also made his Yankees debut for New York. He threw 6 innings, allowing 6 hits, 1 earned run off of a home run, and 4 strikeouts. And speaking of pitching, my favorite pitcher, I know it's almost a cardinal sin, but Nestor Cortez is just the absolute freakiest guy in the MLB. His little fake pitch to whoever that was, I believe it was not Ahmed Rosario, but Jimenez, that's who it was. It's just, you talk about web Gems. That is another one. They, obviously, we will talk about in a second, they head to Toronto today. As mentioned, they are first in the AL East. Moving on to the Boston Red Sox, which, transparency, we are filming this on Monday morning. They're already playing. They already have first pitch started against those Cleveland Guardians as well. So that game is underway. I have it over my right shoulder. Just checked. It's at commercial. They'd won 2 of 3 against the Los Angeles Angels, only losing in the first game 7-0. I did want to mention as well, I didn't mention a couple episodes ago, that Trevor Story will be out for the rest of the year. Just another blow for Trevor Story as he blew out his elbow, or his shoulder, excuse me, as he is now on the IL and out for the rest of the year. And speaking of the injured list, Nick Pivetta as well is on the injured list with an elbow flexor strain. Just another one of those things for pitchers. Kenley Jansen, interesting little note here. He complained yesterday about the ball quality, saying it's just brutal. Interesting note there with everything that's going on with arm injuries, but they are playing the Guardians, as mentioned, right now. They are 9-7 on the season. And finally, the Tampa Bay Rays. They took 2 of 3 against the San Francisco Giants as Ahmed Rosario had a series for himself. 5 for 8 on the series. A homer, 3 RBIs, and a double. And then we talked about weird catchers last time on the AL East and the Rays. We're going to keep that going. Rene Pinto had 2 homers in the series, 5 RBIs. He went 2 for 4 in the series in the other 2 at-bats. 2 strikeouts there. And again, we brought up Ben Roethlisberger,
Roosevelt.
Yeah, one of those two. He was catching, obviously, he's a catcher. But in the game where they lost 11-2 in the second game of the series, he pitched. He hit mound. He threw 2 innings, allowing 3 hits, only 1 earned run, which was better than Chris Davinsky and Ryan Pepio in that game. He also gets a strikeout there. They have the Angels coming up. Two last things I just want to mention as well. Spencer Strider has obviously had his season-ending elbow surgery, and Shohei Ohtani has tied Hideki Matsui's home run record by a Japanese player with 175. His next one will break the record. And speaking of the Dodgers, guys, happy Jackie Robinson Day. It's a real day to celebrate. And the Dodgers will be playing, I believe they will be playing later today in those beautiful Dodger blues.
Thank you, Brett. That is a wrap on the AL East report. Yes, it is Jackie Robinson Day today, and the Jays will be in action as they begin a series against the New York Yankees, who aren't just first in the AL East. They got the most wins in the entire major league. Their 12-4 record is outstanding. They haven't lost a series yet this year, and the Jays will face them for the second time this season. Chris Bassitt versus Luis Gill, Yusei Kikuchi versus Carlos Rodon, and Kevin Gausman against Marcus Stroman are the expected starters for this one. So the Jays will see Gill and Stroman for the second time this season. Coombsy, it's going to be tough against these Yankees. Again, haven't dropped a series yet this year, but they are coming off an 8-7 loss to the Cleveland Guardians. But tough, tough series, man.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough series. The Jays, of course, won the one game against New York. That was the opening day one, the one that I was at. And then after, I didn't go to the other two. They lost both of them. There was that one weird 9-8 one. And then there was, what happened in the third one? It was an 8-3 one. It was a pounding. That was the, yeah, that's right. That was the Giancarlo Stanton Grand Slam game. So, yeah, the Jays are going to need good pitching in this series. They have Chris Bassitt going on Monday, Yusei Kikuchi going on Tuesday, and then Kevin Gausman in the finale. Going up against Marcus Stroman, it's going to be a big start for Gausman specifically. We talked about him earlier in the series, and of course, it hasn't been the greatest start to the year. So what are we going to get from Gausman against New York? It's really hard to say. I think from Toronto's perspective, you just want to come out of this one winning 2 games, and then you've played the Yankees in 2 different series in April, 1 on the road, 1 at home, 6 games. You split 3-3. They see the Yankees 2 more times in the season, once in late June and once in July. I think if you go into kind of those middle of the season series and you're 3-3 against New York, and then, you know, you go into those and you hope, okay, let's try and win both these series, gain some ground. But New York's off to a great start this year. Like you said, they're already 12-4. The Jays are already 4 games back. So if you win a couple here, you make up some ground, that's great. If you lose two here or you get swept at home by the Yankees, then they're already really far in front of you 3 weeks into the season. So that's not obviously what we'd want to see. So hope is two out of three, but I don't know if I'm necessarily expecting that per se.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. The Jays are undefeated this year, like you said, when you're in attendance. And I just looked, there's a flight that leaves Edmonton at 1:20. It gets you to Toronto 7 minutes before first pitch. Fly back Wednesday. It's only $1,500 round trip. How bad do you want it, Coombsy? That's the question.
That is the question. I think it's important for the Blue Jays to recognize that they win every single game with me there. And maybe they should just pay for me to be there. But that's life. It's just things don't go that way necessarily, even though I have a perfect record this season. 1-0. The stats don't lie.
All right. That is a wrap on today's edition of Blue Jays Nation Radio. Three gamer, 7 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and 3 o'clock to wrap things up from the Dome this week. We'll be back later on to recap this one. Get set for a weekend set against the Padres. Coombsy, enjoy the baseball from the comfort of your living room.
Best wishes.
Thanks for tuning in to Blue Jays Nation Radio. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.